All right. Hi, everybody. This is RCFB Talk 48. My name is Bob Akhayeri, and we're going to have a nice evening talking college football. We're going to have a special guest tonight from The Athletic. Nicole Auerbach is going to be joining us. And as always, I'm going to be joined by my co-hosts, JD and Sirius. And it looks like we're going to get ready to go pretty soon. Looks like everyone's already here. So that's wonderful. So just a quick introduction. I'm sure all of you know who our guest is. Nicole Auerbach is with The Athletic. She's a freelance host on SiriusXM, Big Ten Network studio analyst. She was named the Sports Writer of the Year in 2020 by National Sports Media Association, the youngest recipient in the history of that prestigious award. So we're happy to have her on. And actually, let me add my final co-host as we kind of run through this. So yeah, great. Excellent. So Nicole, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Nicole, first question that I've got for you. I know it's been a huge off-season project. How is your golf swing right now?
Well, thank you for asking. It has basically been the thing that has allowed me to say that I did have an off-season of some sorts and a summer of some sort. I took up golf 4 months ago. It's just something I've always wanted to do, but was intimidated to try. And everyone always said, you know, this is something you should do and it's great for networking and all these things. And so it's been going really well. I got clubs, I took some lessons, and I've just been playing a lot. And I got to tell you, like, most of my job is talking to coaches and ADs and a lot of people who are in the prime golfing demographic. And so it has been a great conversation starter. And I am definitely hooked. I got a little like Garmin watch and it allows me to, you know, see how far I am from the pin and everything. So very all in on that. And I feel like it's provided some balance for me this off season.
So, you know, before we get into details, because I know you've been at Big Ten Media Day today. What was the buzz like among attendees?
Well, it was, I mean, there was a lot of buzz and positive energy. I mean, like, this is a league coming a month after they just plucked USC and UCLA from the Pac-12. And so I think there was definitely a swagger, certainly with Kevin Warren, who, you know, everyone's been talking about this a lot lately, but like the glow up that he has had, the ability to get USC and UCLA and to do it so stealthily that like it basically didn't break until it was a done deal was pretty remarkable. And it's just, you know, a lot of people have been kind of reflecting back of like, you know, just what he walked into and then COVID and all these things where like, it was really hard, I would say, for him to gain his footing. And now, you know, you talk to different people in the league and you could just tell in the way that he was speaking earlier today, just about the Big Ten being bold and innovative and leading and that they may not be done with expanding the conference and all these things, that there was just like a confidence level that wasn't there in the past for him. And I just feel like, you know, you talk to like Pat Fitzgerald, who, depending on how you feel about Northwestern, whatever, but he is a very interesting person to talk to about like issues of the day and issues in college football. And he was talking about all of that and about like chaos that's coming and just sort of like all the moving pieces. And he just kind of wrapped it all up by being like, I'm so glad I'm in the conference I'm in. I mean, like, I think that there is definitely a sense of stability and confidence and security that teams in the Big Ten and the SEC feel that definitely you don't feel everywhere else. But like that definitely came through as well, that these are programs that feel like they're in a great spot. They're excited about the future. They know they're about to get a big payday with the next media rights deal, which is not announced yet, but coming. So there was just a ton of, I think, positive energy and just a lot of confidence, maybe bordering on cocky a little bit, but, you know, it's deserved after you get USC and UCLA.
It was quite the coup. How does it feel, speaking about COVID, being back to kind of more of a normal routine after the chaos, really, of the past two seasons and, you know, so much to a virtual format and now kind of everything going back to being in person?
Yeah, it definitely feels nice and so much more normal. I, you know, there are definitely some benefits of some of the stuff going virtual. I think like some of the conferences, especially, you know, maybe in the Group of Five or other places, like have added and incorporated virtual options for their media days or for, you know, maybe different games or whatever it might be, because it actually is really helpful for someone in my position who's trying to keep up with everything on a Saturday to be able to like pop in a Zoom post game for, you know, after an upset or something interesting that's happened. But I mean, there's just nothing like really getting to connect with people in person. And, you know, I tell this to people a lot because I think people always, you know, they always have a lot of questions about like my job and what I do and working in sports. And, you know, if you like sports, it's probably the best case scenario to keep it as a hobby and keep it as something that's fun. And if you work in it and in the types of jobs, you know, like in journalism, you really need to be interested in telling stories and connecting with people and building deeper relationships, because that's the stuff that sustains you. And so when that gets taken away and everything has to be over the phone or via Zoom, it's just, it's not the same. And you know, you can try to tell people stories and do all these things, but it's just not the same as like really sitting next to someone and connecting and getting to know them and not have that like delay in a Zoom. So it was great to be back around. I mean, I certainly didn't take for granted when it was, you know, going to games last fall with fans in the stands again and having that energy. It really was missed. And I think that college sports was maybe the sports that were most affected by not having fans and not having, you know, some of those atmosphere pieces, because, you know, I mean, like college basketball, like what we love about college basketball isn't always just the product. I mean, if you wanted to watch better basketball, you're going to watch the NBA, but it's about like, it's the band, it's the cheerleaders, it's the Cameron crazy, it's all that stuff. And so it's the same with football. And, you know, all that's back and you just like really feel it and can appreciate, you know, having that and getting to spend time with these coaches and these players and, you know, with the season around the corner, like, you know, you definitely feel it, especially after a long off season where there's just been so much happening off the field. I think, you know, you also get that where like people were just kind of excited when they got a football question because there's just so much else happening too. So, you know, there's a lot of different layers to everything that's happening right now, but absolutely great to be back and connecting with people again.
I've always been amazed at just how much more willing to talk people are, you know, when you're in the hallways or just interacting with them casually at a convention or a meeting, versus when you're actually in the rooms where the dialogue is supposed to be happening sometimes, that they're a little bit, you know, they're not quite as guarded. They're more willing to share. And you don't always get that, especially over Zoom, where everything seems to be, you know, more calculated when it comes to comments. It seems like it was both just yesterday and also, you know, eons ago when there were people that were calling for Kevin Warren to be fired because of how they felt he was handling or mishandling COVID and the start of all of this uncertainty. And then now he is, you know, it's like Cinderella, right? That he's the toast of the town because he's been able to pull off this coup of bringing in UCLA and USC. How has that affected the mood, you know, the state of the conference and everything for these people that have probably changed their opinion on from where he was when all of this started?
Yeah, I think if you think back, a lot of that criticism, I mean, certainly, obviously, people wanted to play football in 2020. And it was also about, like, the lack of communication. I mean, I remember hearing a lot about, you know, athletic directors felt out of the loop. They felt like they weren't part of decisions. And just like some of the pieces of how the Big Ten had always done business felt very different. And I think, A, there's been obviously just a much more of a familiarity and understanding getting to know people because, you know, I mean, when COVID hit, like Kevin Warren hadn't even spent time with everyone on every Big Ten campus. And that makes it easier, you know, to criticize or to feel like there's a disconnect and that you don't have these personal relationships. But I also think there's just, you know, it's taken time for him to get his bearings in college sports. He had no background in college sports when he took this job. And now, you know, it's clear that he has a much better understanding of the landscape. You know, he was even talking earlier today about the fact that like when he was interviewing for the job, he had already started thinking about potential additions and schools that made sense and that the LA schools had a lot of Big Ten alumni in that area. And just sort of like the evaluation process of how this conference was deciding what was most important in potential additions. Like, all of this stuff is very interesting and very high level and very transparent now. I mean, obviously, now that we know what has been happening over the past few months, but to be talking about that, like, so openly about, like, this was something since day one when I interviewed for these jobs that I was thinking about. And we also know, I mean, he's been talking a lot about multiple media partners. We know that that's going to be a piece of the Big Ten deal. We know that's something he's pushed for with playoff expansion. Like, there's just a lot of the pieces and the reason that you want to hire someone from outside college sports to be innovative, to look for different revenue streams, to restructure the conference office and all these other pieces, like, that stuff was always going to be, there's going to be abrasiveness in it because you're going to do things that are different that weren't done before. But I think also, like, it's still also going to take time for you to understand, like, how the NCAA works, or like how complicated that is, or, you know, or just sort of like even legislation and changes, or the idea of like lobbying Congress to pass, you know, a federal NIL bill, or all of those pieces of the puzzle. It's a strange place. And there's a lot of people who spent their whole lives working in college sports and the administration, and it's taken them a long time to even get their bearings. And now you've had these like very high profile commissioners pop into these roles that do need to get up to speed on a lot of these things. And so I think, you know, you've definitely seen a lot more of a comfort level on the issues. Like, he was always very hesitant to chime in on stuff, really to go out on a limb. I think there was also, with the Alliance last year, a lot of people were wondering, like, why is the Big Ten doing this when the Big Ten can respond to the SEC by itself, or the Big Ten can stand alone? It doesn't need the ACC and the Pac-12. Like, what are they bringing to the Big Ten? And with the move that they made with USC and UCLA, the way that they did it, and again, like, just this swagger that, you know, Kevin Warren is walking around with, like, it's definitely different. I think the people who are waiting for the Big Ten to be that checks and balance, be that one that's ready to throw punches with the SEC, like, that has happened. And I think that has also created a bit of a different dynamic as well. And, you know, we had Jim Delaney and Mike Slive doing that for so long and working together on stuff, but butting heads on other things. And I just think that kind of checks and balances is really beneficial and helpful for college sports, so that one person kind of, or one region or one league, isn't running roughshod over anyone. And so I think that you have that, like, this is Kevin Warren realizing, like, someone is gonna, like, the Big Ten is gonna step up. The Big Ten wants to chart its own course moving forward and isn't done. Like, the way he was talking about realignment, you know, it didn't sound like that they were going to just be satisfied with USC and UCLA and call it a day. I mean, I think they're being smart about this and, you know, figuring out ways where they're like, okay, if we believe that the SEC is going to continue to grow, or that we will eventually, like, how do we make sure that our top targets aren't going to end up somewhere else, and we, you know, we lose that value or whatever that is. And so the conversations and like the candor and the direction that he was talking about, like, all that stuff is the way that he didn't feel comfortable doing. I mean, he really hedged a lot of his comments, especially publicly, for those first year, two and a half years. I mean, it's very different right now. And I think, you know, coming out of something like that, a big win and something that really shifts, like, oh, this person as a leader, this person as, you know, someone who is really creating change and creating an environment that everyone else has to react to, that's all new. And so it definitely feels different. And, you know, but you've even heard from athletic directors and different people who were critical of Kevin Warren back then, really talking about how much he's shifted, how much he's learned, the relationships that he's had with people in the league. I mean, everyone saw it. There were a lot of people commenting about it today.
And a lot of people were commenting on Kevin Warren's State of the Big Ten speech. And I think one of the big things was him coming out and clearly officially on the record saying today that he's in favor of playoff expansion, even though they don't know how big that expansion is going to be. Was there anything new or notable about his stance that we didn't know before today that he revealed?
I think it was definitely, again, a stronger stance. Again, he hedged a lot of things in the past. I mean, he'd say, like, you know, I like this, but we need to, you know, look at the health and safety. We need to look at the whole calendar. We need to talk about, you know, all of these other pieces. And by coming out and saying, like, I'm 100% in, we need to expand, it's going to happen. I believe we're confident we can get there, and it's just a matter of what the size is that we'll get to. And again, he reinforced that, like, he wants multiple media partners, and he wants that competition, but also different media partners that have a financial relationship with the sport, so they're going to invest more in it. All of those things make total sense. And again, that's, we're going to see that reflected in the Big Ten deal as well. But I think, you know, he, one of his hangups, and ultimately one part of the reason the Big Ten voted against the 12-team model last winter, was automatic qualifiers. And everyone outside of the Big Ten was like, this doesn't, or even some inside the Big Ten, like, everyone was like, this doesn't make a ton of sense. Like, the Big Ten champion is always going to be in the playoff. Like, they're always going to be one of the top six conference champions. They're going to be in. Why is this an issue? But, like, if you think about the idea of where this came from and Jim Delaney wanting conference championships to be part of the criteria for the college football playoff, like, this was supposed to matter. The idea of winning a Big Ten championship was supposed to mean something. And again, maybe it's also because, you know, you're trying to negotiate a media deal, so you could say our champion has a direct spot, all these things. But I think now, in a different environment, one, your media deal is going to be done, so you don't need to sell it to anyone that you're going to partner with, that you have direct access to the playoff, and everyone knows Big Ten's going to get a team in. But also, now you have USC and UCLA, maybe you're more inclined to support models that have more at-large spots, because you're going to have a deeper roster, and you're going to have, ideally, USC is going to be one of those teams that is contending for college football playoff spots. And we know, if you crunch the math, crunch the numbers from the last, you know, 8 years or whatever it is, looking at the 12-team model from last year, and I'm sure it would be very similar if you did a 16-team model or some of the other numbers that people are, you know, going to look at now that you're kind of starting from scratch again, it's going to be a lot of Big Ten teams. There were a lot of Big Ten teams that finished like 5 through 10 in the final rankings since the playoff started. So the SEC and the Big Ten are going to get a lot of teams in those at large spots. So I think that changes the calculations of what you support. This process also doesn't have to be unanimous, because you're not breaking contracts. But I just think, like, the Big Ten is much more, and Kevin Warren, they're just so much more confident in where the Big Ten is, and the belief that you're going to get multiple members and all these things. So I just think they're not going to be a roadblock to what this is going to eventually expand to. And I think that because of where the Big Ten is, just poaching USC and UCLA, and the SEC coming into this, having just poached Oklahoma and Texas, like, they were already the strongest leagues. But now, if we all fully believe that they're going to shape whatever college sports look like moving forward, the preferences that they feel about the college football playoff are going to carry extra weight. And so, you know, if those two leagues are throwing their support behind a certain model or a certain setup, like, that's what's going to end up happening. I mean, you're not going to have a model that one of those two leagues doesn't like. So I think Kevin Warren coming out, you know, and saying 100% in on playoff expansion, it's going to happen, we're going to get there, that is very definitive. And again, like, a lot of people said that they supported playoff expansion, and then three leagues voted against it last time, against the early process, against, you know, a model for specific reasons, or the process was frustrating to them, whatever it was. But again, if you have the Big Ten ready to do this, and people believe that the Big Ten won't be as hung up about, you know, automatic qualifiers this go around, that's going to be significant. Because again, I just think you can't ignore what the Big Ten and the SEC want in any of these spaces, but especially something that's going to be as important and as lucrative as the CFP.
You know, I remember during Warren's statement that he said he wanted to make sure that they're aggressive in how they build this. What should we read into that kind of term, being aggressive, as far as what the Big Ten strategy is going to be?
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting comment, too. I think the way I always think about conference realignment, so I think there's part of that, right? Like I think there's two ways to look at that comment. It's building the conference, which, again, you just added two major members, but also, like, building whatever college sports is. And part of the reason that you have, you know, the Oklahoma and Texases and USC and UCLAs of the world going to the Big Ten and the SEC is they believe there's financial security, and just overall, like, the conference is stable. And they believe that these are the leagues that are going to get to decide what this stuff looks like. They're going to have a seat at the table. They're going to be able to chart their course. And they want to be part of that. They don't want to have things happen to them. And so I think about it the same way with conference realignment. Like, everyone wants to be the aggressor. They don't want, they want to be proactive. They don't want to be scrambling. They don't want to be the last school left in a conference. They don't want to be, you know, without options. They don't want to be reactive. They don't want to be blindsided. And so I think that's another important piece, because that's part of the reason that the vibe is what it is around the Big Ten right now. And, you know, the idea of adding the LA market and these schools and all these things, but like, the Big Ten got schools it wanted. It was the aggressor. It did something. So that everyone else, now we're talking about, like, how are other people going to react? How are other people going to respond? Like, that's the position you want to be in. And so I think that that applies, that the term aggressive, I think it applies to, again, you know, if you eventually want to expand further, making sure that you're not resting on your laurels now, and that someone else is going to get a target that you're interested in, but being nimble in case you do need to add further. But also the idea of being aggressive because you want to have a say in anything, in everything, about what, you know, governance models look like, and, you know, how football is managed, and the size of the playoff, like all of these other pieces. You want to be one of the driving factors behind it. You don't want to have someone else make a decision that affects you. And so I think it's, I took that statement to be twofold in both of those areas. And I think in this current climate, like, that's where you want to be, because so much has happened to other people in college sports, and decisions are being made for others. And you don't want to be in that position in realignment. You don't want to be in that position in governance or NIL or any of these other places where other people get to make decisions that affect you.
With the Big Ten being the aggressor, it's definitely felt like they've put the other three, obviously the SEC is kind of sitting pat right now, but the other three Power Five conferences kind of on their back foot. They're scrambling, being a little bit more reactive right now. Is the alliance still a thing? You know, what effect has this had on the fact that, you know, we went from seeing the Big Ten trying to lead a group to go up against the SEC to now being able to stand toe-to-toe with them and everybody else kind of scrambling to figure out what to do?
Well, I don't think the alliance is still a thing. It was, you know, it's like inside baseball stuff, but like, those three conferences, the Big Ten, the ACC, and the Pac-12 were, had different like joint events planned. And so they went to Selma, Alabama, and were doing this civil rights, you know, the tour and the march, and they were doing all these efforts around it for their athletes and administrators. And, you know, this was like 2 weeks after USC UCLA broke. And I just kept thinking about like how awkward that was. And it was interesting because like the Big Ten and the SEC and the ACC sort of like totally rebranded it and a little bit pretended like they were doing this as their own conference and their own event. And then like in the bottom of the press release, like put in that they were also going to be there with the other two leagues, but it's, like they were doing stuff like that. There were some mental health initiatives. Like, there were things that mattered to, you know, some of the athletes and the people in these leagues. But clearly, like, the idea of a united front, strength in numbers. I mean, like, part of the reasons that this thing was formed was to push back and to respond to the SEC, what they did last year. And if you remember, like, they were talking about, you know, academic missions and broad-based sports offerings and, like, again, kind of like the idea of like the future of college sports and these things are important to us, but everyone wanted to know, are you going to schedule football games? What is this going to mean for, you know, CFP? And obviously those three leagues, for different reasons, but those three leagues are the reasons that the playoff didn't expand last winter. Those were the three no's in the vote. So there was like actual tangible things, because I think slowing down the expansion process, that none of those three leagues were part of the recommendation for that model, we're in this working group. Like, that was a factor. That was part of the reason everyone was scrambling to respond last year. But essentially it was like, we're not going to poach each other's schools. We're going to stabilize the landscape a little bit. So obviously when you then poach the other schools from the other ones, like, then that goes away. And I imagine that things are very awkward. And those were commissioners, you know, I would go to the CFP expansion meetings and I would go in the night early and I would, you know, hang around the hotel lobby bar, and like, those three commissioners spent a lot of time together. And so for one of them to blindside the other, take their two crown jewels, you know, that's going to have repercussions. And, you know, I mean, there was some real awkwardness between different commissioners last year during rounds of realignment, even at the group of five level, because they were poaching each other's best schools and most valuable programs. I mean, like there was real tension that was coming around. So that's going to exist, I'm sure, between Kevin Warren and George Kliavkov, and possibly Jim Phillips getting roped in too, because, you know, it changes the dynamics in that room among Power Five commissioners, but it changes just the dynamics in general, like you said, about like if the Big Ten can just go toe to toe with the SEC on their own, you know, what does that mean? And that's obviously that plus the financial projections we've all seen. I mean, I think that's part of where you get to this idea of, you know, okay, we're moving from the idea of a Power Five to a Power Two if you have further stratification and separation with those two leagues versus everybody else. And there may be multiple steps that, you know, before you get to something that really does look like a Power Two. But I think that's where people are getting the ideas and sort of the sentiments about just how much those two leagues will be able to chart the path for others that, you know, play football or for everyone else in Division One or all these things because of how much weight that those two leagues are going to carry.
Just, you know, gut reaction, do you think that we may actually see the Big Ten and the SEC a little bit more closely aligned because of, you know, the money gap between them and everyone else and what they're able to do with that, what their schools are looking for in the future?
Well, I mean, you know, people are always like, well, what if those two leagues just decide, like, their champions will play each other for, you know, that's the postseason. I mean, that's always going to be a hypothetical that people are going to throw out there. It's a little bit sort of like, you know, when the Power Five would threaten, you know, should we break away or, you know, take our ball and leave or whatever, when they wanted different power in the NCAA governance structure and they got autonomy, and that's why they call themselves the Autonomy Five. So like there's always going to be that, you know, potential for, oh, we could just go do our own thing. Like we have that much power to do it. But I think the value of like a true national championship, and, you know, Greg Sankey has talked a lot about like the health of college football as a whole. I remember I was working on pieces for The Athletic before last summer when they announced like, here is a, you know, an expanded playoff model that we want to recommend. But I talked to all the 10 commissioners. This was after the 2021 championship game, whatever it was, where it was like, you know, everyone's getting concerned. It was always the same teams playing in the playoff. Then the top recruits were only going to the same six teams. We were only talking about like the same top six teams, like all season long. And, you know, just sort of all of those issues, part of the reasons that like people want to expand the playoff. And Greg Sankey, who, you know, we come to find out was on this working group looking at these issues. We didn't know that at the time. And he was saying stuff like, I'm concerned about the health of college football. I think it needs to be strong in different regions. It needs to have, you know, national interest and all these things. But he was kind of saying some stuff like, you know, I know that the system has worked well. The 14 playoffs worked well for the SEC. But what about everybody else? And that was a shift in tone because, you know, to that day, you know, there were a certain number of people who were just like, nope, 14 playoff is good. I'm set. But to say, like, I'm concerned and there needs to be national engagement. There needs to be teams that are in the hunt in other parts of the country and more, you know, access for more people. Like, that was a real shift. And so I think that people who are going to be making these decisions are going to think about that and the idea of a true national championship. So, again, when you think about, like, that threat to, like, oh, we could just go do our own thing, it's not the same experience as a national championship, as something that does include all parts of the country and different, you know, regions and all these things. But this sport is trying to go from being a regional sport to a national sport. And in some areas that's worked better than others. But I just think like in terms of health and balance, like you want teams to be strong in different parts of the country and also some of the traditional powers and different things that have been down. But you want all of those pieces. So it is going to be interesting to see where those two, where the Big Ten and the SEC are aligned moving forward. Again, I think like logically you would think at large spots in the CFP because we know the depth in the top of that, in the middle of those leagues, like they're going to get a lot of teams in. You would think about that. One of the other things I keep thinking about, and we'll have to see if this plays out, but if we think about the revenue gap that these schools and those two conferences are going to have by the end of the decade, like at some point, if those schools are able to pay like the coaches way more than schools in the Pac-12 or the Big 12 or the ACC, like you would think that the best coaches in those leagues would be candidates to get poached, right? Like, or the assistants, right? If you could pay the assistants more. I mean, this is something that has contributed to the Pac-12 and some of their on-the-field problems is there's been lateral movement, or what should be lateral movement, with assistant coaches and head coaches who are making more money in other conferences. So, you know, what does that look like? What about resources? Like, where are those gaps? And, you know, if there's other changes down the road, like unlimited staff sizes for football staffs, like, how are those conferences and those schools going to spend the money if they have so much more money than schools in those other leagues? I mean, so that stuff's going to be really interesting to see. And I think that could also impact, like, you know, what are things that they push for? Or, you know, in this era of like deregulation, like what are some of the things they want the conference to be able to have control over or allow spending on that maybe not everyone can pay for? Like all that stuff's going to be really interesting. But I do think there's going to be some alignment on benefits that you could offer athletes when you can afford to offer more things.
Just a quick reminder for those listening, this is RCFB Talk. Our guest right now is Nicole Auerbach, and I actually just wanted to check in with you. I know it's been a long day. Do you have any more? I mean, it's been 30 minutes. I just want to see, did you want to stick around or did you need to take off? We just want to make sure.
Yeah, we could do it. Let's say like another 15.
All right, that sounds good. Well, I know, JD, you had a question.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, thank you for the extra 15. We always appreciate that. But I am curious, as we've talked about, you know, the collaboration of the leagues, the autonomy too. One of the things that we've seen recently is Kevin Warren has come from the pulpit and said he's looking for federal level legislation to come in to kind of help with NIL. We've seen Mark Emmert and the NCAA also advocate for some kind of federal relief as well when it comes to actually regulating any kind of NIL that goes forward. What are the odds that we're actually going to see any kind of that federal legislation, especially if these leagues are struggling to work with each other right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think at this point, people are curious to see how the midterms go, because you've seen a difference in bills that have been proposed from Republicans and Democrats, because the Republican proposals have been more narrow and more about like NIL specifically. And then you've had some of these bills proposed from Democratic senators and representatives that have been more all encompassing, have affected maybe healthcare services, like for athletes beyond their playing days, or even have, you know, talked about collective bargaining or those types of like broader, much, you know, revenue sharing, like really significant shifts. But I always keep coming back to this, that last year in the lead up to July 1, when NIL was set to take effect, and there was so much, you know, there was so much fear and anxiety about the fact that you could possibly have different laws in different states. And then what happened for states that didn't have laws, like there was a lot of fear around the unknown and the idea of a quote patchwork of state legislation and policies. And then that wasn't enough to force Congress to get something done. And the world kept spinning. Things kept moving. I mean, we had a great football season, despite the fact that NIL was a thing. I mean, you know, coaches and administrators and a lot of people, you know, have gotten frustrated about collectives or about this or that. But like, we are still going to watch college football this fall, and it's going to continue to move on. And you are in a legal environment where you don't want to impose a bunch of rules and restrictions around athletes' earnings because you're going to be subject to antitrust issues and laws, which is part of the reason, you know, when I hear Mark Emmert over the years asking Congress for help on this, or even when I hear some, you know, high profile administrators talking about, you know, congressional help, federal help, it's like, you're still probably asking for an antitrust exemption because you're just not going to be able to add rules and restrictions around something like this in this particular climate and this legal environment. So it's kind of asking to be allowed to add rules and not get in trouble for it. So like, you know, again, I think like we're moving in this world towards decentralization in general because of these antitrust issues, because of concerns about this like antiquated system. So I don't know if that's going to end up coming, because again, the world, the axis, like everything's still spinning. People are still watching and playing and participating in the college sports ecosystem. So is there urgency when there's a million other things Congress can do? And then, you know, again, even in this climate, like, does it even make sense when everything else is going to be, you're going to have more decisions made at the institutional level or the conference level, because that's just what needs to happen when you have the Supreme Court ruling the Alston case and Brett Kavanaugh's concurring opinion basically saying, like, bring more lawsuits challenging this model because there's antitrust issues. Like, I don't know if you're going to ever move back in the direction of adding more restrictions around these things, or getting Congress to make it enough of a priority to look at it. But again, you know, for the optimistic, if you do want federal intervention or some help creating national structure around this, like, you're definitely going to pay attention to the midterms and see what shakes out from that in terms of, you know, some of the proposed bills that have been floating around there over the last couple of years.
You know, I wanted to just kind of slightly change gears just for a second. I know, well, forget hot seat. Is Scott Frost's chair literally made of flames at this point?
I think that is probably an accurate statement. I think, you know, my colleague at The Athletic, Mitch Sherman, had a really good piece up on our site today, just sort of about, like, how Nebraska has set him up to sink or swim. Like, this is it. I mean, you know, he's had such a long leash because he's a favorite son, because, you know, they had an athletic director change, and you know, you're looking for signs of growth. You changed your staff below Scott Frost. You've got a different quarterback. Like, all these reasons that you could say were excuses. And I think that it's just one of those things now where it's like there's no other excuses left. And Nebraska has set him up with resources and the commitment and the patience to say, like, this is it. So we're going to have to see, because it's so awkward. I mean, I'm a Michigan grad, and, you know, before last season with what Jim Harbaugh did to beat Ohio State, get to the playoff, win the Big Ten, like, there was a lot of the same friction of, like, what happens when you got your white whale, you got the coach you wanted, who is this, like, kind of legendary figure in your program, and then it's not working. Like, it's really awkward. And, you know, some people jump ship or, you know, are calling for certain people's heads, but then it's like, but also you want them to succeed. And then if it's not them, then who? So there's a lot of tension around all of that. But I think, you know, I mean, if you look at anyone, if anyone else that's not Scott Frost had put up the records that Scott Frost had at Nebraska, they obviously would not have been at media day today. They would not still be the coach. And there was also money, and the, you know, the buyout is going to be much more manageable this year, as well as of October 1st. So that changes some things too. But I mean, obviously, you know, 3 wins, 4 wins, not making bowl games, that's not what Nebraska wants to be. And so I think you are going to have to see that growth, because I was talking to someone about this earlier, you know, in the day, but the idea that, like, of coaches talk about, like, the idea of, like, learning how to win, and it sounds so cliche, but you actually, that's a real thing. And when you actually talk to coaches about it, like, they can give you examples of that. And Nebraska found a way to lose so many games last year, and there were so many dumb mistakes and special teams issues that cost them games. And so it's just like, they're not beating teams that they're supposed to beat. And they're also finding ways to lose because they couldn't find ways to win, and they didn't know how to win those games. And so you get to the point where, like, they have a, you know, is it 21-6 lead or whatever it was over Iowa. And you're like, oh my God, how are they going to blow this? Because you knew that they were going to. So I think, you know, certain things about, like, discipline and execution and beating teams that you're supposed to beat and doing those things, like, those would show significant growth for Nebraska if they're able to do that this year. And, you know, I'll probably get a pretty good glimpse in week zero when they're up against Northwestern about, you know, what that actually, what progress there actually is and what's realistic. But I just think, I can't think of anyone that would have had a hotter seat in recent memory, because no one else would have gotten this extra year from the school that they were working at. Like, it was such a unique situation for Scott Frost and Nebraska to be in this position now, that I think, you know, the answer is you've got to win games. but Nebraska has also done all it can. Like, they're going to be able to say, we did everything we possibly could to support and set up Scott Frost. So if it doesn't work, they're going to be able to pull the plug.
We've actually had some callers, and over the course of the offseason, they've called in, and, you know, they're fans of teams that are winning one or two or maybe three games a year. And like, you know, how do I get optimistic about the season? And that's one of the things we talk about with them, is that, you know, when you're starting at the bottom, you have to look for those little victories of, you know, beat the teams you're supposed to beat, compete against other teams, you know, stay competitive, and look for improvement game to game, year to year. And, you know, don't expect them to come out and suddenly put together a winning record overnight. And yeah, being able to have the, see that the players have that confidence of doing the right thing, and putting themselves in those winning positions, and that the coaches are giving them what they need to get there. It makes a world of difference. And yeah, Nebraska just, they haven't had it. I mean, statistically, they should have won more games last year than they did. And at a certain point, it's not just random chance. There is something going on in that program that's preventing it from happening. But Scott Frost, obviously a very unique position. You mentioned Jim Harbaugh finally extricating himself from the, you know, is he ever actually going to do what we need him to do? Can he beat Ohio State? That situation. Is there another program, another head coach that you're looking at this season that's kind of gotten himself into some hot water? You know, maybe this could be the tipping point, and, you know, it could just be too much for the athletic director, for the mega donors to really put up with anymore?
Well, I'm sure there will be something that pops up, because there's always something, and then, like, you know, $20 million pops up out of nowhere for a buyout. But I think what was interesting was last year's cycle was so crazy and so many high profile jobs turned over that I do think there's got to be a little bit of a reset, or at least a break, to see if some of these coaches work out. Where you're not going to have, you know, I don't even want to say it, 'cause I'm going to jinx it, that like there would be something crazy that happens in this coming cycle. One thing that I thought was really interesting, and Kevin Warren brought this up, the Big Ten, that this is the only Power Five league that didn't have any turnover at the head coaching position. And again, we're just talking about Scott Frost, right? And should he or shouldn't he have, you know, been retained as the head coach? Like, so there's definitely reasons where you're like, well, maybe there was too much patience in certain situations in the Big Ten, or surprised that, you know, James Franklin is still at Penn State, or did he want to go somewhere else? Would someone else have been interested in him? And then he signs that long-term extension. So, like, there's you know, Jim Harbaugh flirting with the NFL. Like, there's lots of different situations there. So I don't really have a great answer for you right out of the gate. I mean, there's definitely coaching circumstances that I'm pretty interested in watching. I mean, I think Herm Edwards still being the head coach at Arizona State, I mean, that's another scalding hot seat. And just honestly a little bit shocked that it's almost August and he's actually still the head coach of that program, because there's just been so many different dumpster fires that have popped up there. But like, I'm also just interested, and this isn't a hot seat situation, but like Dabo Swinney, you know, with two new coordinators, having lost like these coordinators that were so important to their dynasty and their run to these national championship games, all becoming head coaches. Like, what does that look like? What's different with that? And also, like, what is Brent Venables like as a head coach? I mean, this was someone who, you know, I've done stories and talked to a lot of different players who played for him. And like, what happens when you know, have to put on that CEO hat and do that stuff as well. So there's like a lot of interesting circumstances, I think, throughout the country. And, you know, I think Chip Kelly, UCLA is an interesting one to watch. But, you know, I think in terms of like the pressure, you know, certainly Scott Frost, Herm Edwards, they're in a different category. I think Steve Sarkisian in Texas, I mean, that place is a pressure cooker. He didn't have the kind of success that he would have wanted and fans want in year one. There's just a lot of pressure at some of these places, and especially the places that can pony up the money and are ready to pay buyouts to get someone new and the next best thing. So it's going to be very interesting, but I do think, you know, with a lot of the high profile jobs that turned over, you know, it's going to take a few years to see, you know, how some of those shake out. But there's definitely some hot seats. There's definitely some pressure And there's definitely just some interesting dynamics that I'm pretty fascinated to watch. And, you know, I think, you know, Florida State is an interesting one to see, you know, if they can turn a corner. You know, Miami, what is this influx of support, resources, money, recruiting, everything that's happening there? Like, what does that look like in year one? Like, there's just a lot of, you know, I think really interesting dynamics with new coaches, or again, coaches that, you know, either, again, Sark's only been there a very brief time, Scott Frost's been there a while, but, you know, are really in pressure cookers.
Nicole, I know this is probably going to be the last question we got with you for the night, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the SEC. It's the proverbial and literal elephant in the room. What is the storyline you are most interested in with the SEC headed into this season?
Well, I don't know if they are literally an elephant, but I guess we could say maybe Alabama brought one. So I guess maybe a little bit literal. I think the question, you know, so many people have been asking me is like, okay, so Alabama and Georgia, and then who's the third best team in that conference? And I think just the idea of chasing Alabama, chasing this standard and this this dynasty that Nick Saban has set, there have been so many hires in this conference of people trying to hire, you know, from the Saban tree and trying to replicate many Alabamas. And Kirby Smart actually did it, and they have their own thing going. But it's so hard to try to set or meet a standard set by someone like an Alabama. And so I think, you know, that the questions of, you know, A&M in this recruiting class and the talent, you know, and just sort of like the type of athlete you need to compete and to really be, you know, close to the level of Alabama. Like we saw how many great recruiting classes and how much five-star talent and blue chip talent in general that Georgia had to kind of accumulate before they could get to the point of actually beating them and getting to that mountaintop. So what does that mean for everyone else who's trying? You know, Auburn's been a mess. That's another head coaching situation that will be, you know, a very interesting one to track this year. You know, South Carolina, like that, they're really interesting to me. I really like Shane Beamer. You know, what is their ceiling realistically? I mean, the issue with the SEC is everyone wants to all – you know, have Alabama caliber seasons or win all these games, and people are going to have to take losses there too. You know, so what is that, you know, what is Billy Napier's Florida team looks like? I know there's those consternation all off season about the recruiting, like who kind of emerges and who builds and how do they build to try to get up to that level behind Alabama and Georgia? Like, I just think that's really interesting because of how we've watched people attempt and fall short, and then LSU flash in the pan or what Georgia, you know, how Georgia did this. Like that stuff's really interesting. I also think just in general, the pressure of defending and repeating is immense. And so I'm curious to see what this iteration of the Georgia Bulldogs look like after you do get to that mountaintop, after you do achieve this thing that your program hasn't achieved in a really long time. What do you do after that? I'm just always very interested in that psychologically.
Nicole, final question, then I will let you go. That SEC preseason poll came out. Did Vanderbilt deserve their one number one vote?
First of all, my theory on this is that I think that someone must have said, like, drunkenly that they were, like, you know, they were arguing with a friend and they, like, made a bet. And they were like, if I lose this bet, I will vote for Vanderbilt to win the SEC. Like, to me, that's the only logical way that this happens. Because I just, you know, like, listen, I got my friends. I know they're listening, the Sickos guys. Like, that is, you know, something they would do. But, like, really, everyone is supposed to take this seriously. Everyone is supposed to, you know, again, these are media polls. They're almost always wrong. People guess things wrong, predict things wrong all the time. But to me, this had to have been a lost bet. I love the optimism if it's not, but I would like to know who it was. I think we need to talk about rescinding voting privileges though. When someone does something like this, I'm against groupthink. I think there's too much of that sometimes with some of the voting where everyone just votes the way that everyone else votes. But there's also times where, you know, I'm just a little bit concerned about the person who cast that vote.
Well, Nicole, we just wanted to thank you so much for taking some time this evening to come and join us. I think this was your depth of knowledge on all of this is just astonishing, and we enjoyed every second of it. Thank you so much.
All right, and I'm happy to come on and talk about, you know, Nebraska Northwestern and all of the games that maybe not everyone is watching, but I know that that the Reddit CFB community is paying attention to.
Oh, absolutely. And we appreciate it. And we wanted to also just thank all of you out there who joined us this evening. Just a couple of quick minor housekeeping things. We have some more Twitter spaces coming up soon. Tomorrow afternoon at 1 p.m., we have Daniel Libet from Sportico, who's going to be talking about a piece he also did on sort of the last several years of the Big Ten. On Thursday morning, we're going to have Phil Steele joining us at 10 a.m. Eastern. On Monday, August 1st, we're going to have John Talty, the senior sports editor and SEC insider at AL.com, who's got a new book coming out about Nick Saban. We'll have him at 1 p.m. And then we're going to have Wall Street Journal's Lane Higgins joining us next Tuesday night at 10 p.m. with others also on the way. We're sort of trying to schedule these as we can go. But again, for all of you out there, thank you for joining us. We always enjoy that. And if you miss the beginning of this, these automatically turn into recordings. So you can listen to this as soon as it's done and hear the beginning or anything you might have missed. And we are also eventually putting all of these into a podcast form that'll be available on most podcast sources. Now my age is in my mid-40s is starting to show up because I'm not a real podcast person. But you'll be able to listen to them there too because they'll last beyond 30 days. So on behalf of all of us, on behalf of JD, on behalf of Sirius, on behalf of myself, Bob Akairi, thank you all for joining us. Now I'm going to hang up and listen.